This is Digital Story Podcast number 990, March 11th, 2025. Today's theme is My First MacBook Air in Years. I'm Derek Story. The last time I bought a MacBook Air was over a decade ago. It was the super nimble 11-inch model that I could slide into my camera bag to manage web pages and answer email while on the go. The screen wasn't anything to write home about, but it was so compact. Fast forward to 2025 and a substantial update to the 13-inch M4 Air. Why am I doing this? Find out on today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I have loved my current laptop, the 14-inch 2021 M1 MacBook Pro. I moved up to it from an Intel laptop. It was such a difference. The big thing I really noticed was battery life right off the bat. You know, and this is really good when you're on the road, at our workshops, all those times when you don't want to be tied to an outlet. You go and go and go on the battery that you have in there. The performance was fantastic. And the nice thing about this MacBook Pro that I have, it was the return of buttons up at the top, you know, for screen brightness and volume and all that good stuff. And it also has ports other than just the USB-C ports. It has HDMI port, has an SD card slot, has the MagSafe. It has all sorts of good stuff. But here's the thing. Here's what I noticed. Around the house, when I'm just hanging out there, we want to check something, let's say, and I'll go and pick up Teresa's MacBook Air. She has an M series MacBook Air, fairly recent. And it's just like feather light. I just like pick it up and it's just like air. It almost like floats. Now in actual weight, and it's ounces different, but it feels like pounds difference. It really does feel different. I've been envious because when I go on these trips to Cuba or to Durango or, you know, wherever we happen to be going, I'm always trying to pack as light as possible. So I'll get my gear bag, you know, in pretty good shape. And then I put in my MacBook Pro and it's just like, it just feels like suddenly it's like 4G or something like that. And it's, again, it's funny how ounces make a difference. Ounces make a difference, don't they? But this laptop has served me well on the studio, on the road. It has 1 terabyte of SSD storage, which I highly recommend for anyone in our audience, because I have tried to get by on less, and at some point you start worrying about your storage. With 1 terabyte, I have had not a problem at all. Not a problem. In fact, right now, I can check right now because I have this laptop right here. I still have, after all these years, 418 gigabytes of open space on my 1 terabyte drive. Now, I do rotate catalogs off annually and stuff like that, but I have super small SSD drives that I plug in that have that stuff on there. And when I'm on the road, I don't have to worry. I can just upload everything, and I don't have to think about it. So 1 terabyte, at least 1 terabyte is the way to go for people that do what we do, which is take pictures, and some of us even shoot movies. One mistake I did make with this laptop is that it only has 16 gigabytes of RAM. And I'm trying to think back, how did I end up with only 16 doing what I do, right? And I think this laptop was on special. I could get the 1 terabyte, but the special had 16 gigabytes of RAM instead of 24. The deal was with 16 gigabytes. So I thought, well, 16 will be all right. I will tell you that I like to have a lot of applications open because I'm going from Lightroom to Capture One to Photomator, all that kind of stuff. And I do run out of application memory. I do. and it's been more so lately. But I do run out, and then I have to close something. You know, you get the little warning, all that kind of stuff. So for what I'm doing, 16 is not enough. It's not horrible. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen. So I'd love to have that extra 8 to go up to 24 gigabytes of RAM. I think that would make a big difference. And of course, as I mentioned, I have the MagSafe power, the 3 USB-C ports, all that good stuff, and the SD card reader, which has been nice, but not as necessary as it was when I got this laptop, and I'll explain why here in a few moments. So I love everything about it, except it's a bit thick. And it looks thick, and it feels thick when I pick it up. You know, I can pick up Teresa's Air with one hand, no problem. This one, I better use two hands. that kind of thing. When the new M4 MacBook Airs were announced just recently, I was thinking, M4, that's a pretty big step up from M1. And I did the comparison charts and all that sort of stuff. They improved the video conferencing feature, which I use my MacBook Air for, especially on the road. And it's pretty and it's light. It's light. I could save ounces. I was very tempted by it when I first saw it. But then, you know, two things happened that really pushed me toward, you know, just being tempted, because we're tempted all the time, right, to getting serious about this. The first one was that they actually reduced the price on the M4 compared to the previous MacBook Air. So $100, and then that kind of translates all the way up. $100 less for the base model, so you can get it for $999. Of course, when you start to add on, it's still less than if you were adding on to the previous model. So I was going, wow, okay, M4, improved video conferencing, reduced price. That was the first temptation. But then here's the second thing that really got me, is that Apple right now is running a turbocharged trade-in program. If you have late model stuff, and my 2021 qualifies, I guess because it's an M series, they're giving really good trade-in prices. So I'm going, how good are those trade-in prices? I think I'm going to check. So I go onto their site and I enter the serial number of my M1 MacBook Pro, and holy cow, it came back with a trade-in price of $810 that I could put toward the new MacBook Air. $810, I'm telling you, was a lot more than I was expecting. I was thinking maybe $500, but $810. So I'm going, whoa, okay. So then I go back. You guys have done this, right? So then I go back to the M4 Air page and I start to configure the one I want. So I get the one with the most cores, right? Because they have two models, an 8-core and a 10-core. So I wanted the 10-core, of course. I wanted 24 gigabytes of RAM because that's something that I really need. And as I mentioned earlier, and then, of course, I need the 1 terabyte SSD. Can't go for anything less. The price for all those upgrades for the M4 Air was $1,599 plus tax minus the 3% rebate that I get for using my Apple Card. Subtract the $810 for my trade-in, and now I'm getting a brand new M4 for $789 plus tax. And I'm going, $789, 1 terabyte, 24 gigabytes of RAM, M4 processor. Oh, wow. I said, okay, I'm going to sleep on it and then I'll decide in the morning. And that's my thing. I always want to, like, I'm just going to go to bed now. I wake up in the morning very early. So I wake up in the morning, I set up the trade-in. And indeed, $810, so I've got that going. And then they will put it towards the purchase. Now, they don't knock it off first, so you've got to pay the $1,599. And then once your trade-in is accepted and inspected, then they knock it off, right? So then you get it knocked off the price. I have to wait for that, but my laptop is in fantastic shape, so I'm not worried about that part of it at all. this point, you're probably thinking, but you are giving up some features going from a MacBook Pro to a MacBook Air. And indeed, I am. So let's just take a look. Let's do the feature comparison because these are fun to do. So, and you can do this on the Apple site. You can plug in whatever computers you want, and then they'll do side by side, which is really helpful. See where I'm gaining and where I'm losing for my $700-some-odd investment here. On the screen, there is a difference on the screen. I'm getting a 13.6-inch screen for the Air. My existing screen is 14.2 inches. The Air is a liquid Retina display, and the MacBook Pro is a liquid Retina XDR display. So it's a better display, although I'm looking at Teresa's display all the time, and I feel very fine with the regular liquid Retina display. In terms of chips, I'm going from an M1 Pro to an M4. So that's an upgrade. And when they compare those two chips, is that the M4 is 2 times faster than the M1 Pro. The M4, 2 times faster than the M1 Pro. Now, if you're going from an Intel machine, it gets crazy. It's like 26 times faster. But, you know, as we all know, the M1 is a very good chip. The M1 Pro is a very good chip, but you still get 2 times faster. 10 core on the CPU for both of them, 10 core on the MacBook Air for the GPU, and I have 16 core on my existing one. So there's a bit of a downgrade. 16 gigabytes of unified memory on my existing one, and I'm going up to 24 gigabytes. Definitely an upgrade there. They both have 1 terabyte SSDs, so that part's nice as well. Okay. On battery life, I'm getting a bump. I'm getting at least an extra hour. Looks like an extra 2 hours of battery life on the 13-inch. Oh, on the display side, the resolution is different. 2560 by 1664 for the Air. 3024 by 1964 on the MacBook Pro. The height, width, depth, and weight definitely coming out ahead on the MacBook Air. The official weight for the MacBook Air is 2.7 pounds, and the official weight for the MacBook Pro that I have is 3.5 pounds. And as I mentioned earlier, it feels like a lot more. It really does. The camera, which is the other upgrade that I'm interested in, on the Air, I get the 12 megapixel center stage camera with support for desk view, 1080p HD video recording, advanced image signal processor with computational video. On my existing laptop is 1080p FaceTime HD camera. There's a little bit of a difference there. 4-speaker sound system on the Air versus a 6-speaker sound system. So probably a little bit better sound on my existing MacBook. On microphones though, 3-mic array on both of them. And of course I get a headphone jack on both of them as well. Keyboard, essentially the same sort of thing, backlit, Touch ID, all that good stuff. There is an upgrade on the Wi-Fi. I get Wi-Fi 6E with the new one, Wi-Fi 6 with my 2021 version. More ports with the MacBook Pro, right? You get 3 Thunderbolt 4 ports, those USB-C ports, plus HDMI, plus an SDXC card slot. Now, part of the reason why the card slot is less of a thing for me now than it was, when I got my iPad mini with USB-C and my iPhone 15 with USB-C, I also got this very cute little SD card reader that is USB-C. And I use it with the iPad. I use it with the iPhone. I have it just like right there in the front pocket of my backpack. And it's not going to be a big deal for me to use this little card reader that I actually like very much with the MacBook Air. So whereas before the card readers that I had were kind of big and cumbersome and they didn't work on all my devices, now I have this cute little card reader that works on everything from my laptop all the way up to my iPhone. So the card reader is a convenience, I will say, when it's built in, but it's not nearly as big a deal as it used to be. Both computers have Touch ID, which I really like Touch ID a lot, by the way. Now, this is interesting. When you do the battery comparison, the new one, the Air, has up to 15 hours of wireless web. My MacBook Pro that I have right now is 11 hours of wireless web. That's a pretty big difference. Up to 18 hours of video streaming versus 17 hours the movie playback. So there's less of a discrepancy there. But when you're actually doing work online, there's a much bigger discrepancy. Even though the battery's smaller on the Air, 53.8 watt versus 70 watt. But then again, you know, all the electronics are improved and the efficiency is improved. So I'm giving up some ports and the SD card reader, a little bit on the display. But basically, I have to say, I'm coming out very well with the new laptop, and it's lighter. Did I mention that it feels a lot lighter? Yeah, it feels a lot lighter. That's why I went ahead and went for it. I haven't received it yet. I have to wait 2 weeks before I get to go pick it up. I'm just going to go pick it up at our local Apple store. And then I will receive a box here probably in about another week where I ship back my MacBook Pro for my trade-in. Now, you may be wondering what I'm going to do if there's any sort of gap. I have my Mac Mini right here, my M2 Pro Mac Mini that I record the podcast on and that I use in the studio. So I'll be okay until the new MacBook Air comes. That is why I'm making the switch. I feel very good about it. By the way, you may be wondering, which color am I getting? I'm getting the midnight blue. I'm getting the dark one. I know they're talking up the light blue version, you know, this brand new color, but that midnight blue to me looks really nice. And then I'm always thinking about photo editing and having that darker frame and then the darker base while I'm photo editing just feels very appealing to me. So I'm going for midnight blue. I'll let you know how it goes once it arrives. Why does everyone love CCD sensor cameras? And this is an interesting post on Amateur Photographer. And I have actually been seeing stuff like this too. And I'm kind of wondering, why are a certain segment of the photography community so excited about CCD sensors? So I thought, let's find out. Let's read what this guy has to say. And I have a link to it in the show notes. It's been bugging me that I've been maybe wrong about something all along. The CCD sensor, or charge-coupled device, has long lived in my mind as the poor relation to the CMOS sensor, aka the complementary metal oxide semiconductor. Sensors being the component of our cameras, like the frame of film before them, convert light coming through our camera's lens into an image. But have I been misformed? Has there always been an alternate reality where CCD, in fact, king and CMOS is second rate? In terms of bragging rights, CCD came first, beginning mass production in the early 1980s. By contrast, the first prototypes of CMOS sensors did not appear until towards the end of the decade. In the tech world, newer is always better, or is it? Apart from being more recent, I also thought that the CMOS sensor's popularity was down to it being more time and energy efficient. While the older, slower CCD is still in use, it's typically at the lower, cheaper end of the digital camera market. By contrast, high-end complementary mirrorless models universally house a CMOS chip and command a premium price tag for it. With CCD viewed as having been superseded, or so I thought, it would be a great surprise to hear Canon, Nikon, or Sony boasting about the latest CCD incorporating camera. Okay. So at this point, I'm trying to go, all right, is he just having fun with us, or is he really going somewhere with this? Maybe we'll find out soon. So while CMOS is very much the preference for the latest generation cameras, has CCD been unfairly maligned? After all, There's still love out there in line with social media fueled interest in vintage point-and-shoot cameras. Could this affection probably be because it is somehow viewed as being attractively retro? The first digital camera owned would have contained a CCD chip after all. Or is there more than nostalgia at play? There are those who would argue that, far from giving images an old school look, CCD can deliver more natural looking results than CMOS. Less visible image noise when shooting in lower light environments is often cited by fans. Ironically, for something that delivers a digital images, results from a CCD also win praise over CMOS among photographers for delivering smoother tones and a more film-like aesthetic. I take the latter suggestion with a pinch of salt. My experience of shooting with CCD incorporated in digital cameras is that the results look very much, well, digital. Bright colors and low resolution might equate with film in some people's minds, now that we're used to the searing sharp detail from the likes of Sony's recent CMOS-equipped Sony A1 Mark II. So maybe that interpretation of the qualities of CCD is a misconception that has become popular through repetition. Seems to me that it might be fair to class CCD as neither inferior to or better than CMOS, but just different. We have both in the world, so why not enjoy both? I don't think he really answered the question, but it is a good fuel for discussion in that I have, and I'm sure you do too, some cameras with CCD chips in them. And I will say this, to me, they do look different. They do look different. Now, on these cameras, I can't usually push the ISO up past 400. So is that the CCD or is that just the pipeline technology that that camera had access to at the time? What if we use today's pipeline technology with a CCD chip? You know, would those things change? I don't know, but I do know that some people really like the alternative look of a CCD sensor. And I do think that if you have a camera with a CCD sensor in it that you probably haven't shot with for a while, find the battery charger, charge up the battery, fire up the camera, and take it for a walk. And just see what you think about those images. They will look different, and maybe they would provide you with a look that you go, you know, there might be times when I want this look. I'm going to keep this thing around. Just food for thought. The OM3 isn't a successor to the Pen F. A new Pen is still coming. And this is according to Petapixel, Jaron Schneider. And I took a look at this article because I wanted to make sure it wasn't just speculation. But they actually talked to OM System recently. And there are a lot of quotes in here. So I go, okay, quotes are good. Let's see what they have to say. When Petapixel first laid hands on the OM system, OM3, it was easy to believe that this might be the best chance photographers could expect to see anything resembling a Pen series camera again. Luckily, that doesn't seem to be the plan. It has been nearly a decade since the Pen F was announced. The last new Pen series camera from Olympus, now OM system, outside of the Pen EP7, which never touched the shores of North America, was announced. It is no surprise, then, that many photographers have given up hope that it will ever make a return. Compounding that with Olympus spinning off the camera brand into its own company, it is easy to believe that the Pen series is a thing of the past. Luckily, OM System seems to have no intention of letting it die, and even better, the new OM3 is not meant to be the successor, spiritual or otherwise, to that beloved camera series. Speaking to Petapixel at the CP Plus show in Yokohama, Japan last week, the company was surprisingly candid about its plans for the Pen. Quote, "The OM3 is not a successor of the Pen series," says Vice President of Brand Strategy and Product Planning at OM System. He goes on to say, so of course we are thinking the Pent series is an important lineup for our company. We are trying to study the success of the Pent series, but again, the OM3 is not a successor of the Pent. The Pent series remains an important part of our portfolio, and we are actively exploring the possibility of new Pent model and are currently considering what Pent series model we can offer as OM System. When asked about the trend of manufacturers removing electronic viewfinders from compact cameras or adjusting their interface to appeal more to smartphone users like the Sigma BF, OM System says it is considering both sides of that equation when looking at the next compact Micro Four Thirds camera. Quote, we are considering both sides of the market demand, VP says. We want to make sure photographers actually enjoy operating the camera. We are really considering which kind of product may be better to expand to new users. Maybe they want to continue to use their smartphone but have some interest in standalone cameras. So we are now thinking about the new Pent concept from this point of view. End quote. Based on how OM System spoke about the Pent series, it seems all but assured that OM System is at least moving forward with revisiting the line at some point in the near future. However, given the language its team used, it seems like development is still in the very early stages. Even if photographers have to wait a bit for the next Pent series camera to be released, it should be a bit of relief to those waiting patiently for nearly 10 years that OM System is, at least for now, planning one. So I think this was interesting, and I'm actually surprised that OM System was this candid talking about potential future products, but I'm glad they did, because I was one of those people that was figuring that the OM3 was a mashup of, you know, their SLR style camera and then the rangefinder style camera, the Pent series. And I was thinking, you know, this is a pretty good mashup, right? I'm testing one right now, as you all know, and I'm having a blast with it. But it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like the OM3 is its own thing. And then if the Pent series does pick up, then it will be its own thing as well. That's neat to hear because it gives us a little peek behind the curtain to see what OM System is thinking. And having a feel for what they're thinking, I think, is very important at this juncture. As kind of a side note to all of this, testing the OM3 right now, and a lot of people have really expressed concern about the lack of a front grip. So I go, okay, I want to test it with a grip and without a grip. Now, they're not really making, no one's really making grips yet. I'm sure we're going to see something from Small Rig sooner than later. And I have seen some, if you don't mind ordering directly from Temu or someone like that, there are some things you can get. But I managed to use a grip that I have for my film camera, the OM10, with a slight modification. It works on the OM3. And for those of you that are curious about that, I wrote about it on last week's Nimble Photographer newsletter. So at any rate, I'm using that grip. Use it for a while, and I take it off and I shoot without it. And I will say this, that when I have that little grip, and by the way, you can see a picture of it in the newsletter. When I have that little grip on there, the camera is more comfortable to hold and for longer periods. So I do think, as much as I like the looks of the OM3, and if I do keep it, which I'm leaning toward that, then I think when someone introduces a grip that I really like, someone like Small Rig, I'm probably going to get it because the thumb rest on the back of the camera is really good. And you combine a little bit of a front grip with it and it's super comfortable. So as far as the rest of the camera goes, I have to say, and I'm just going to reiterate what I've already mentioned, I think it's a fabulous camera. I think they just did a fantastic job with it. I'm going to be out in the field shooting with it this week again. I'll keep you posted along the way. But that having that little bit of grip in the front, I have to say, did make it more comfortable. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news here. We've been recording some mini sessions for the upcoming 1000th podcast celebration. If you want to contribute, if you have a TDS moment you like to share, or you have a little interview in mind that you want to do, I have a calendar set up, a meeting calendar set up. The link is in the show notes. It's easy. You just click on the link, it takes you right to the calendar. And I have slots open on Fridays. We still have time to do this. We're adding them. But I want to get as many recorded as I can. And if you're interested in doing this, just click on the link in the show notes that take you to the meeting calendar. Sign up, and we will do a TDS moment for that upcoming celebration. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for sponsoring this community, for sharing their thoughts, for keeping my photography embers glowing at the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. It's just a great community with lovely people and great artists and very kind people. And that's something that I have to say we don't see as much online these days. I don't know if we've ever seen it that much online, to tell you the truth. But this community is kind and they're constructive. I just love hanging out with them. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and joining that community, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around a bit, sign up, and then you will be getting a note from me with access to our Inner Circle space and with discount codes and all that good stuff that will make you happy and very glad that you became a part of this community. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this show. And finally, I'd like to give a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I've had a number of people ask me if we're going to do a printing workshop this year. After all the people that we've run through the printing workshops over the last few years, I was sort of surprised, because generally what happens is that there's an arc on these sort of things. And then after a workshop, either online or physical, has been around for a while, then, you know, signups start to tail off a bit. And so I usually give it a rest and then revisit it like a year later or 2 years later. Because of the notes that I've been getting, I probably will put an online printing workshop in the online schedule for next year, for 2026, because there seems to be enough interest in it. And if I do, I'll be working with Red River Paper, because they provide, in this case, not only access to the great paper, but all their expertise. I feel like just turbocharges our workshop and just makes it even more interesting. This is the kind of partner that we have in Red River Paper, and their paper is exceptional. And if you're interested in getting your hands on some or learning more about them, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can use our code there on our landing page for free shipping. Get yourself some paper. Learn a little bit about what you can produce with your inkjet printer. And bring out the best in your images by printing them on great stock. Big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.